Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 4. It is the Blitz. Mitch Widmeyer right here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today usually joins us on Thursdays, but he's here with us on a Wednesday. Zach Bennett, host of the Locked On Wolves podcast, the Wolves Wired podcast, and he covers the Wolves for Cold Omaha as well. Go to coldomaha.com, click on the Timberwolves tab. Zach, Wolves making news. They signed Lance Stephenson to a 10-day contract. It's certainly a name that resonates. Like, there's name recognition with Lance Stephenson amongst basketball fans, but I caution people, this isn't the Lance Stephenson that we saw with the 2013-14 Indiana Pacers.
No, but could it be? I've been calling it a very un-Wolvesian move. It's a low risk, high reward move that I frankly don't think, I mean, barring the exception of the whole Gary Neal ordeal a few years ago, that the Wolves would have done in years past. But hey, what the hell, why not, right?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I guess the only, it's not even a gripe, the only thing I thought maybe didn't make as much sense is, so Zach LaVine's gone for the season. Zach LaVine, known as a shooter, Lance Stephenson doesn't really fill that void, but depending on his role, who knows? And he's a Tom Thibodeau guy, right? Because Tibbs is a defensive-minded coach, and Lance Stephenson throughout his career has been known as a defensive-minded guy.
He's certainly a willing defensive player, and, you know, it's a very complex decision. Like I said, low risk, high reward. There's obviously the whole he blew in LeBron's ear thing. He's been with a few different teams. Couldn't hack it in L.A. with Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers, from my understanding, just didn't want to have anything to do with him. Shipped him over to Memphis. Dave Yorger, Minnesota native, makes the most of him. So who knows which Lance Stephenson we're going to see and which one we're going to get. But my guess is that, he won't play tonight. He'll be here for this 10-day. Teams are permitted to sign players to two 10-day contracts before making a decision on signing them for the rest of the year. So I'm guessing, at the very least, we'll see him sign at least two 10-day contracts, if not more. Or if not, he'll be here for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I think this can be summed up in one easy way. It's that the Wolves had a spot. It fills that void. And you brought up a good point, Zach. It's a very low-risk move for the Timberwolves. And, I mean, who else are you going to get on the free agent market that's better than Lance Stephenson at this point, right?
Absolutely. I totally agree with you there. Plus, with the short rotations that Thibodeau likes to roll with, we're seeing Brandon Rush move into the starting lineup in lieu of the injured Zach LaVine. And, along with Shabazz Muhammad, I think Lance Stephenson will bring another scorer off the bench, and the Wolves are one of, if not the absolute worst scoring benches in the entire league. Granted, we need to view it within the scope of Thibodeau doesn't like to play bench guys a whole lot, but I think definitely it'll provide the Wolves with another playmaker off the bench in limited minutes, however many he ends up getting in his short stint or however long his stint happens to be here.
Any idea what happened to Lance Stephenson? Because the drop-off, I don't know how dramatic it was, but that year with the Pacers, there were a couple of seasons, 2012-13 and then 13-14. I mean, most basketball fans knew the name Lance Stephenson, and of course he was given the opportunity and stepped up to the plate at times of guarding LeBron James in the Eastern Conference playoffs when LeBron was with Miami, and it seems like that was like 7 or 8 years ago. The guy's only 26 years old, which kind of surprised me. Why was the drop-off so steep with Lance Stephenson?
You make a good point. He's in the physical prime of his career, definitely at 26. I think when Charlotte gave him a bunch of money after he left Indiana and Steve Clifford didn't like what he got in Lance Stephenson, I definitely think the word got out as, there's the whole, could he be a head case thing. And I think that question's still up in the air. If you rub Steve Clifford and Doc Rivers the wrong way, Steve Clifford, who is a good friend of Tom Thibodeau's, I think that bodes not very well for you in your career in terms of longevity. But he has struggled with injuries, too. His most recent team, New Orleans, he played six games, had a groin injury. They decided that it wasn't worthwhile to keep him aboard and ended up cutting ties with him, letting him go. So, I mean, I think the word is out that he's sort of a, he could be sort of a head case. Maybe insubordination could be a problem with him, but truth be told, I don't quite know, but I am excited to cover him, and I can certainly do some due diligence, and we can talk next week about him.
Do you think he ends up getting another 10-day contract, or I guess that seems likely. Do you think he ends up inking maybe a 1 or 2 year deal with the Wolves, or is it? I know it's hard to tell at this point, but how do you see this playing out with Lance Stephenson?
I think he'll definitely get another 10-day contract. Most people who sign 10-day contracts do. At the very, the Wolves, it's tough to say because they're going to have so much cap space to play with during the next offseason. Do you really want to hinder yourself by signing Lance Stephenson to a 1 or 2 year deal when you could go out and actually be a playmaker in free agency? I definitely think he'll get another 10-day if he plays well and Tom Thibodeau likes what he sees at both ends of the floor. We're talking about a guy who could end up signing like a Brandon Rush 1 year prove it deal. What can you do in 1 year under me? And you know, if you play well, maybe we'll re-sign you, or if you play well, maybe another team will sign you around the league because they like what they saw. So I think worst case scenario for Lance Stephenson, he's going to get a tryout for 2 dead-end contracts. Best case scenario, he'll get a 1 year deal when it's all said and done.
Zach Bennett, our guest today on the Blitz, host of the Locked On Wolves podcast, the Wolves Wired podcast, and he covers the Wolves for Cold Omaha as well. On the court for the Wolves recently, I mean, they find ways to lose in different ways, Zach, and the way they lost to the Heat on Monday was a way we haven't seen yet this year, storming back really late, forcing Miami into multiple turnovers, yet they still come up short.
Yeah, and as Tom Thibodeau pointed out immediately after the game, they didn't play defense up until that final 2 minutes, and even then he was hard-pressed to say that they played defense on those final two possessions. But, you know, they were in a position to win. Andrew Wiggins had a couple chances to tie or win the game. I think everybody's wondering why he didn't pull up for three. I can answer that question to the best of my ability in saying Andrew Wiggins has always been a big fan of the pull-up long two, and that's the shot he took. It's the shot that he beat Phoenix with. So I think, and I know for a fact, Tom Thibodeau said that he was happy with the shot Wiggins got. But when you give up 25 second chance points and you were dominated on the glass as the Wolves were, and you know hardly played defense throughout the entire game, you're begging to lose in dramatic fashion in front of the what I'll call a bleak home crowd like the Wolves did to Miami on Monday.
I feel like if they want to be taken seriously as a playoff contender as early as this year, you have to win against teams like Miami at home. And I get they're hot and they've won something like 11 straight, but they're still 8 games below 500. You beat Brooklyn at home. You're beating the Magic at home. Miami's another one of those teams that you got to take care of business and protect your home floor if you want to be taken seriously as a playoff contender.
Totally, and Andrew Wiggins didn't even show up in the first half. He had something like 6 points. He was totally had an invisible stretch of play, albeit you know he ended up scoring 13 in the third and had a nice fourth quarter there and kept the Wolves in it. But you know they really missed the absence of Chris Dunn, I think, in that game. Ricky Rubio, although he is a solid defender, I think Goran Dragic had his way with him at times, and to the tune of 30 points, he was something like 8 of 9 from the field and 5 of 5 from three-point range during the first half. And when, I love me some Goran Dragic. Growing up as a Suns fan, he helped the Suns sweep the Spurs in the playoffs a few years back. But he's lost a step, and for him to have that good of a performance is basically unacceptable. As you said, the Heat they won their 11th straight game against the 11th straight game on Monday against the Wolves. But you're right, they're not a very good team on the season in terms of overall body of work, and for the Wolves to totally come and not play defense, it you know, how can you be taken seriously as a playoff contender when you're giving up that, you know, over 105 points a game?
The frustrating thing was Goran Dragic. That factor to me. He's only scored 30-plus points in 3 games this year, and lo and behold, he scores 33, lays down 33 against the Wolves, made it look easy at times, couldn't be slowed down. And I got to admit, I didn't see that one coming, but looking back on it, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that Goran Dragic, who you mentioned, Zach, has lost a step, and he's been kind of a non-factor in a lot of games this year for Miami. He goes off and puts up 33 against Minnesota.
Yeah, I have a hard time criticizing him, obviously, because of his 24 straight points scored against the Spurs in the fourth quarter of a Game 3 in a playoff series as a member of the Phoenix Suns a few years back. I'm a big follower of the international game, and he's been magnificent to watch. He even a couple years ago, I want to say it would have been 3-4 years ago, he did the Sam Cassell big ball dance in a Eurobasket final. So he's quite a character, and the lefty shooter. He's just a fun player to watch. It was cool to see him go off against the Wolves like that to a certain extent, but I mean it was frustrating because I think Chris Dunn definitely would have limited him to less than 33 points. Tyus Jones and Ricky Rubio were unable to do that.
Zach Bennett, our guest today. On the flip side of that, Karl-Anthony Towns was a monster again. He had 35-8. It's hard to envision him playing even better than he has been, but with LaVine out, I know some people put the onus on, well, Brandon Rush is going to have to step up, Boz is going to have to keep playing well, and things. Tyus Jones is going to be getting more minutes in the absence of Zach LaVine. He's going to have to step up. I actually look at the two cornerstones, the two pillars of the franchise, and say, if it's possible, I think more of the burden almost goes on Towns and Wiggins to elevate their game to that next level.
Totally, and I think Tom Thibodeau would tell you that Towns needs to play better defense. We're still seeing, him going rogue at times. We're seeing continuity being broken in certain defensive rotations. I mean, there was a three that Goran Dragic made in the first half where Andrew Wiggins is rotating around. He's coming from the corner where his man is, rotating around Ricky Rubio, who is on the near arc, the same arc, or on the same side of the court that Wiggins is coming from, and rotating over and trying to defend a Goran Dragic three at the top of the key. And I'm not fluent in Tom Thibodeau's defense like the players are, but I'm thinking to myself, man, this can't be right. And John Krasinski of the Associated Press asked a question in the post game as to whether they're not, as is the team grasping the defensive concepts, or are they just not applying them to the effectiveness that Thibodeau would like to see. And as Thibodeau said, consistency and urgency at the defensive end has been a problem. And talking to the players afterwards as well, it sounds as though they understand it too. A matter of playing defense for 48 straight minutes has got to be difficult for them, and it has been. So it's just a matter of them, are they going to have that aha moment? Are they going to realize that every single possession is valuable? And when that will happen, I'm just not sure.
At this point, who do you believe ends up with the 8th seed in the Western Conference? There's a lot of teams in the mix. It seems like 1-7 as far as who will get in, not obviously the seed number, but teams 1-7 are set in stone unless one of them just collapses. Who do you think ends up with the 8th seed at this juncture?
Shoot, man, you're really putting me on the spot here. I want to say Portland will turn it around, but I can't say. I just don't know. Portland's been really good. The Kings, had it not been for the Rudy Gay injury, I'd say had a good chance, but they're looking pretty grim. Maybe I think the sleeper and the trendy pick will be Denver. I really like their. They've got some veteran-laden. They're a veteran-laden roster with Tyson Chandler and. Or Wilson Chandler, I'm sorry, and Danilo Gallinari. But one of those two, I would say Portland and Denver would be my pick.
Do you feel like when I watch Denver, and I've watched maybe 6 or 7 of their games this year, it just feels like a weird put-together team. There's just a bunch of different pieces. They have young talent like Emmanuel Mudiay, and you don't know how he's going to pan out. They have the rookie who I loved coming out of the out of Kentucky this year, and Jamal Murray. Then they have some vets like you mentioned, Fareed and Gallinari, and they've got Jokic, who's been hurt, nicked up lately.
Wonderful.
But he's been really, really good when he's been on the court. That just seems like an oddly put together team when you look at all the different pieces they have.
Yeah, and who better to take over a team like that than Mike Malone, who seemed to be the only one who could get on to DeMarcus Boogie Cousins' good side. I think he's done a wonderful job, and for a guy who's the son of a defensive mastermind and Brendan Malone, a supposedly defensive coach, for him to take over a team in Denver in a city where, run and gun style is preferred because you have such a home court advantage due to the altitude, I think the job he's done is wonderful. And Denver, as you said, is a weirdly put together roster. And, even more the point that you made that I wanted to harp on, Jamal Murray. I mean, he's just been excellent. It's a guy that I thought the Wolves were going to draft. It's up in the air whether or not they should have drafted him. You know, should the Wolves have drafted Jamal Murray over Chris Dunn? I think that question is certainly unanswered to this point, but he's definitely had a better year than Chris Dunn, in my opinion. And his international experience playing in big moments with Team Canada, you're starting to see that, you know, pan over and transition into his NBA experience. And, you know, the big stage doesn't faze him one bit. And he's just been a joy to watch in the limited number of games that I've been able to tune in.
I think we talked about this last year at a couple different junctures. I'm a huge Jamal Murray guy. I actually, no disrespect to Chris Dunn, I wanted the Wolves to draft Murray. And I actually said the day after that draft, I think Jamal Murray will either be the best or second best player behind Ben Simmons to come from this draft class when we look 5, 6, 7, even 8, 9 years down the road. I think he's that gifted, he's that talented, can play the one or the two, and he is getting more and more comfortable, which on one side I love watching Jamal Murray play. On another side, it kind of makes me a bit bitter because I at times wish the Wolves would have him as well.
Totally, but at least they didn't draft Buddy Hield.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Wolves tonight, Toronto in town, Zach. How do they limit Lowry and DeRozan?
Well, DeRozan's coming off an injury, which I learned from Sean Woodley, who hosts Locked On Raptors podcast. We had a nice little conversation that I'm going to publish, and it's going to be today's edition of Locked On Wolves. But DeMar DeRozan's a monster. I think we're going to see a nice game from him, although Wiggins does match up well with him at the two position, so the Zach LaVine injury comes into factor there. No word yet on if Chris Dunn is going to play. I don't think he will, and that is going to be a problem because Kyle Lowry could be, if not, is the best point guard in the Eastern Conference this year. So how do they slow him down? I'm not sure, but Jonas Valanciunas is prone to be a foul machine. I think you can go to Towns down low and exploit that matchup. And aside from Valanciunas, they really don't have anybody who's going to match up well against Towns. So I think slowing the game down, not letting Lowry and DeRozan do work in transition, and making sure Wiggins and somebody with some good size matches up against DeRozan is going to be a big factor.
Who's the second best team in the Eastern Conference? Cleveland, to me, is still Cleveland's best team in the Eastern Conference, just to put it bluntly. And then you've got Toronto and Boston, and the Wizards are coming in hot. Who do you as the second best team in the East? Because Toronto is right in that mix.
I'm taking the Wizards. It could be a trendy pick, but I watched their game on Monday against the Cavs, and you know, with the emergence of Otto Porter and how well Beal and John Wall are shooting the ball lately, it's hard to argue. I don't think Boston has. You know, I don't think Boston, come playoff time, has enough size to match up with the likes of, you know, Isaiah Thomas is good. He's been a compelling story throughout his entire career in the league, but there's no way he can guard the likes of Kyle Lowry and John Wall come playoff time, and the size is really going to hurt them. But I really like Washington. Marcin Gortat, we forget, was one of the, when he was backing up Dwight Howard in Orlando, was one of the most heralded centers and coveted centers in the league when he went to Phoenix, and I still think he's, you know, really strong, and he's got some power, and he can match up well with a lot of opposing centers. And with the emergence of Otto Porter and their ability to go small with him at the four, I think Washington definitely is the second best team in the East, in the respect that they'll give Cleveland the best matchup in a 7-game series. You might see Boston finish second in the East, but I think that'll be fool's gold when push comes to shove in playoff time.
We'll leave on this. Are you ready for our who wins in a street fight?
I am so ready. I don't know where you I don't know where you're going to pull this week's out of. I even tried to pay attention to see to sort of preview and prep, but I got no idea what you're going to do here. So let's get it.
All right, I was league pass scrolling the other night, and I stop on Sacramento and Chicago. The Bulls and the Kings are playing. Close game. Chicago is up like 27 in the third. Kings storm all the way back, still come up short. During that game, Matt Barnes gets into a verbal exchange with a Bulls assistant coach. Boogie Cousins proceeds to walk by and nudge the Bulls assistant coach a little bit. He got teed up for it, and it caused a spat between Barnes, Cousins, and then the Bulls' whole bench and their players. So I ask you, Zach Bennett, Because to me, Cousins, we're talking street fight. Boogie and Matt Barnes are just on another level. So I'll ask you this one. Who wins in a street fight, Matt Barnes and Boogie Cousins, or the Bulls starting five that night, which consisted of Michael Carter-Williams, D. Wade, Jerry and Grant, Taj Gibson, and Robin Lopez?
I'm going Matt Barnes and DeMarcus Cousins. I thought you were going to go Bulls coaching staff, and that would have been a no-brainer because Matt Barnes and DeMarcus Cousins would have made haste.
Oh yeah,
against the staff. But I mean, as we've seen, Matt Barnes will show up at your house if he doesn't like what you're doing. There was the whole moment with Derek Fisher, but he is quite the beast. And Michael Carter-Williams, he's nothing. Robin Lopez. He likes to beat up mascots, but when it comes to, you know, actual street fighting, I don't think he's got it in him to do it. Dwayne Wade, he's had a plethora of injuries. I don't think he wants any at this point in his career. I think he just wants out. Jimmy Butler.
Jerry and Grant started.
Oh, Jerry and Grant started over. Yeah, well, yeah, then there's no question. I'm taking the two Kings players. They're monsters.
Again, I wish I could disagree with you. The only reason I debated it is because it is 2-on-5, but I feel like Matt Barnes is the guy that sees that the numbers aren't in his favor and he just embraces it even more. He probably would look at Boogie and say, all right, I'll take Michael Carter-Williams and D. Wade and throw in Grant. He's like, you just handle the bigs. You take care of Gibson and Robin and we'll be all right.
Yeah, Todd Gibson is a monster. I think he's the one guy who had me going back and forth there briefly, but you know, it would be. I wish we could. Do you remember? You remember the show Celebrity Deathmatch?
I do. Yes.
I think we need to call the illustrators and get them to recreate this as some sort of YouTube channel. I think there would be money in that, and definitely entertainment.
A great idea, folks. The podcast to look at are the Locked On Wolves podcast and the Wolves Wired podcast. Go to coldomaha.com as well. Click the Timberwolves tab to find Zach's work. Zach, as always, thank you for the time.
Hey, anytime, Mitch. Anytime.
Much more coming up next right here on the Blitz.